Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
Coming up momentarily, we'll catch up with Danny Parkins of 670 The Score in Chicago. But be sure to be listening this Friday as we will be giving away a Travis Kelce autographed helmet. We will qualify someone every 15 minutes from 6A to 6P. So from the moment Fesco in the morning starts until our show ends on Friday, we will be qualifying someone every 15 minutes for a Travis Kelce autographed helmet. So when you hear the sounder, be listening, call up. You'll have a chance to win a Travis Kelce autographed helmet. Coming up in about 45 minutes at the top of the hour, we will have a playoff touchdown draft. Everybody from the station will be on the show. We will do a snake-style draft to pick the two players that we think will score the most touchdowns over the course of the season. We've got some money on it. We've got some stakes on the line. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll do that coming up in about 45 minutes. But let's head to the phone lines right now to catch up with our next guest. He is the afternoon host at 670 The Score in Chicago. Danny Parkins is his name, but that's not what he goes by on this show. Park, what's good?
Good afternoon, CDOT. Happy Wild Card Weekend, my friend.
I can celebrate Wild Card Weekend. How are you celebrating it, given the fact that your team was eliminated, I don't know, week six?
Well, let me tell you how, Carrington. From 8:30 in the morning on Black Monday in the NFL until 1 p.m. when the owners, George McCaskey, started to speak and put his foot into his mouth for 70 minutes. That 3.5 hour period was the most enjoyable 3.5 hour period that Bears fans have had since the first round of last year's draft when they traded up and drafted Justin Fields. I can't even tell you that a actual game this season was more enjoyable than that, because like the Steelers game was fun and Justin Fields balled out in the second half on the road Monday Night Football, and it made us dream of actually having a franchise quarterback for the first time in any of our lives. But he wasn't really that good in the first half, so it wasn't really a full 3.5 hours of enjoyment. But the 3.5 hours from when Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace were fired to when George McCaskey started saying dumb stuff, that was really the best moment of the Bears fans' last calendar year.
When it comes to the head coaching vacancy for the Bears, who's getting the most buzz?
I think the most popular hire would be Jim Harbaugh, but no one has any idea if he wants to come, because you don't have to formally request an interview with a college coach. But he's so Chicago. He's so Midwest. There's a bunch of Michigan alums. He's an ex-Bear, Harbaugh family royalty, quarterback success, NFL success. So, like, I think he would be the most popular hire. Brian Flores, in terms of the coaches that they have requested an interview with, is to me the most qualified. I'm still holding out hope for Josh McDaniels, but there is no consensus. But I got to say, Bears fans seem pretty impressed with the list of candidates, because everyone looks good on paper compared to two guys who just failed. So they're like, oh, the vice president from the Steelers, that's a good organization. Or it's like, oh, defensive coordinator from the Colts, that's a good organization. Like, the Bears are really only pulling from better organizations than them, so it leads to optimism. But you got to remind people that, like, that's what they did last time, right? Ryan Pace came from a good organization with the Saints, and obviously Matt Nagy came from a good organization with the Chiefs, and it didn't work out so hot. So right now it's a time of hope trafficking in Chicago.
So this Chiefs and Steelers game to me feels a lot like the playoff game that you watched last year between the Saints and the Bears. You remember that was the Nickelodeon game, and the Bears just showed me exactly why the NFL shouldn't have expanded the playoffs to include teams like them. Pittsburgh is the worst team that made the playoffs to me. If you can't score 27 points or more, I just don't know if it's realistic to think that you can beat Kansas City, and I just don't trust Pittsburgh's ability to score.
I agree completely. I know why the NFL expanded. The NFL expanded to get another batch of television games in their playoff window, right? I mean, we have a doubleheader on Saturday, a tripleheader on Sunday, and a Monday Night Football playoff game, Wild Card Weekend. And it led to a lot more intrigue in Week 18, where, you know, the Packers had the one seed locked up, but the one seed wasn't locked up in the AFC. Like, seeding was just so up for grabs this year that, you know, they did it for competitive balance and money, not necessarily because the Pittsburgh Steelers this year or the Bears last year, to your point, deserved to make the playoffs. No, man, like, the Steelers can't win. And I think if they played the game 10 times, they would lose 10 times. I don't think there is a single scenario that exists, barring Pat Mahomes getting injured on the first play, that really ever puts this game into doubt. And I know our buddy Nick Wright said it on TV today, that it's like a bye week for the Chiefs. I don't know, like, what the health status of Kelce is, like, if he's 100%, but it'll be interesting to see if the Chiefs get up 21-3 in the second quarter, if guys start taking some snap series off just to, like, be sure that they're fine for next week. It would be very unconventional for that to happen in a playoff game, in an elimination game, but I honestly do not see a path to victory for the Steelers.
We talked to Mitch Holtis about this a couple days ago, and I'm with you. I don't think Pittsburgh can beat Kansas City. I think Kansas City could beat Kansas City in this, but if you got to start making any given Sunday arguments in the first round of the playoffs, it just goes to show that you just don't have a realistic path to winning. The only path to winning for Pittsburgh is TJ Watt just going crazy. He has 3 sacks, a forced fumble, but again, we're just talking pipe dreams at that point.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, like, okay, TJ Watt probably will go crazy. TJ Watt's the best defensive player in football. But if he has 3 sacks and a forced fumble, like, let's say that you punt on all the possessions that he gets a sack, and let's say that they score a touchdown off of the forced fumble. All right, that's 7 points. But you know what I mean? Like, the Steelers' offense can't score. They cannot score. As long as the Chiefs, for the majority of the game, make them start with the ball in their own territory, they're not driving 75 yards down the field and converting for 6. They have shown no ability to do that with any degree of consistency, especially on the road. So TJ Watt probably will have a great game, but Mahomes and Tyreek and Kelce and, you know, Andy Reid and the Arrowhead home field advantage and Melvin Ingram's revenge and like everything that comes with it, man. Like, Ben Roethlisberger is cooked. He cried on the field 2 weeks ago because he thought his season was over. You know, he is not supposed to still be playing this week. So I know we have to pretend and we have to hype up all of these games, but I think that a totally viable conversation is, who do you want to be rooting for in the other AFC game, because it's an easier matchup for you in the divisional round of the playoffs?
Right now we're talking to Danny Parkins of 670 The Score, going over Wild Card Weekend. I've been making this comparison all week toward the Ben Roethlisberger final tour. You remember whenever Draymond Green and Paul Pierce got into that argument and Draymond was like, "You ain't Kobe"? That's exactly how I feel when it comes to this Ben Roethlisberger. A couple of weeks ago, ESPN was trying to draw out this emotion towards Ben Roethlisberger that we were seeing a legend hang things up. And I'm thinking, you're not Kobe. Nobody loves you like this.
Well, they love him like this in Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh, like Boston, for the Paul Pierce example, is a city of super passionate fans. And like the Celtics, the Steelers are arguably the most iconic organization in the entire sport, right? Like, the Packers would take issue with that. The Bears would take issue with that. The Cowboys would take issue with that. But if you're doing Mount Rushmore NFL franchises, the Pittsburgh Steelers are on it. And the guy had a remarkable career, and he should be going into the Hall of Fame, and the no losing seasons and everything, and multiple Super Bowls and everything that comes with it. So, you know, we romanticize these athletes and we turn them into heroes, and then we tear them down as villains and we build them back up as heroes. And that's what we do in, like, the sports media industrialization complex that we are both part of. But he's definitely not Kobe. He's definitely not Brady. He's definitely not Peyton. He's not even Rodgers in terms of an all-time great. It's just when it actually is time for it to be over, because he plays for the Steelers, it carries like a little bit more poetic license for the national media outlet. But like if Ben Roethlisberger had the exact same career and it was entirely for the Seattle Seahawks or the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Buffalo Bills, it would not have been romanticized in the way that it was because of the black and gold.
You and I probably agree with this. I think the hardest thing for any organization to do is tell your franchise quarterback no. It was obvious to me at the end of last season that Ben Roethlisberger was cooked, that he was done, and it was time for them to move on. But they wanted to give Ben his final swan song and send him out the correct way. And I guess technically they did it because they made the playoffs. But I think he's a bottom five quarterback, and you can make the argument that he is the worst non-rookie starting quarterback in the National Football League.
Yeah, the idea of sending him along is real tough, right? Like, the Colts were able to do it because they had a clear path to, hey, well, we got Andrew Luck now, so it's probably in everyone's best interest here if you move along, right? Like, very few, if any, organizations in the history of football have moved on from a great all-time franchise icon more seamlessly than that if the icon still wanted to play, right? Like, Elway went out with the Broncos in the greatest fashion an athlete can go out on, but he retired. So he made it easy on them. Ben wanting to continue to play and the Steelers not having a clear path to an immediate upgrade with, a top five pick in the draft or a top 10 pick in the draft and a pretty damn good roster, all things considered, right? The offense is way worse than we were expecting it to be this year, right? If Juju Smith-Schuster had performed to the level that he had, maybe that they are actually a somewhat more balanced team. We knew their defense is awesome, man. They got stars at every level of the defense. So all it would take is, the 10th to 15th ranked offense in the NFL, and the Steelers would be a contender. It's just they have no ability to do that with Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback and some of the other issues they've had on offense. So, remember what happened to Eli Manning and the Giants? Like, Ben McAdoo benched him when he had the consecutive start streak going. And everyone was like, you can't do that to the greatest quarterback in the history of the franchise who's won a couple of Super Bowls. So it is hard to tell the franchise icon no, but the only way you can possibly do it is if you have a path forward at quarterback that even that franchise icon would agree is an upgrade at quarterback, or they're retiring. And the Steelers had neither option.
Let's look ahead 5-7 years. Do you think we remember Ben Roethlisberger more for what he did on the field or off the field?
On the field. I mean, the off-the-field stuff is ugly and awful and criminal, right? Like, there's no debating that.
But it's just this huge cloud that's been over his career for basically the last 10 years or so. Like, everybody knows it, everybody talks about it, and we just sort of push through it,
Well, yeah, and I mean, but that happened with Kobe, that happened with, it's not the same, obviously, so don't anybody, take it this way, but, it happened with Ray Lewis, it happens with all-time greats who, when they go through the legal system, even if we don't think that justice was served, they get to go back to being all-time greats. And it doesn't mean that you forget it. It doesn't mean that it's not a part of the obituary and it's not a part of the story. But, 5 years from now, he's going to be getting inducted into Canton. So we're going to be talking about him as a football player 5 years from now, because for the last 10 years we've been talking about him as a football player.
Right now we're talking to Danny Parkins here for a couple of more minutes. Danny, let's go through the other wild card games. The first one, Vegas against Cincinnati. I know you're going to be betting on all of these games. I already know.
Yeah, of course I'm betting on all these games. And this is my upset special.
Oh!
I think the Raiders are a very live dog in this spot, and I bet him at +6. Josh Jacobs has looked very good since returning, and the Bengals are an incredibly explosive, high-powered offense, and let's see how it all translates to the pressure of everybody's first playoff game. Like, I think Joe Burrow is on track to be a top-five quarterback in the NFL for a decade pretty damn soon. So maybe he starts his run immediately. It's certainly possible. Ja'Marr Chase and him look like they'll be a very special offensive combination. Like, the Bengals could make this look ridiculous and hang 35 in a blink of an eye, and I'll feel real stupid about it. But I think that the Raiders know who they are, that Derek Carr completes a high percentage of passes. I'd be surprised if he makes a lot of back-breaking mistakes in this spot. And I think that 6 points is too many. So I think that the Raiders are a very live dog, given how much pressure and inexperience is on the Bengals side.
I look at Buffalo, New England as the game of wild card weekend. We've seen these two teams play earlier this season, being in the same division. I thought they were both really good games for different reasons. The first game was the ultimate chess match of Belichick's not going to throw it, and can you win a game by running it 70 times the way that he did? The second game, Buffalo goes on the road to Foxborough and leaves with a win. This is going to be the tiebreaker and decide who moves on. Who do you like in New England, Buffalo?
I like Buffalo. I think that Bill Belichick's a genius, and he used 70-mile-an-hour gale force winds to his advantage, and that negated the biggest advantage that Buffalo has over basically every single team in the NFL, which is Josh Allen's incredible arm talent. You know, it made Josh Allen, like, he couldn't fire the ball down the field in that game like he does. So given the forecast looks like it will be reasonable, normal football weather for this game, I think that neutralizes the big advantage that the Patriots had in the weird game. It puts the onus back on the skill position talent, which Buffalo has a clear advantage in.
I don't want to spend any time talking about Philadelphia at Tampa Bay. Philadelphia only had one win this season against a team that finished with a winning record. That team was the Saints. Are we going to spend any time talking about this game?
No, I'm excited to see Jalen Hurts in this spot. And I think that Tampa, without Antonio Brown and the Chris Godwin situation, like, it might be a little closer than we think for a little longer than we think, but the Bucs will win that game by 14 or more.
I think that's a game that you can go spend a little extra time with the wife. You watch the first two games on Saturday. On Sunday, you kind of, you know, spend some time with her, maybe watch a movie, maybe catch up on HBO shows, and then you get locked in for San Francisco at Dallas.
Which should be an awesome game, and I think it's the toughest one to call. I mean, maybe the Monday night games over just division and playing for the third time, but San Francisco is so inconsistent, but what they do, they can do really well. And Dallas is arguably the most talented roster in the NFL. Like, I mean, maybe with the Packers getting Bakhtiari and Jair Alexander back, you'd say them. But Dallas just has studs everywhere. But we know that Mike McCarthy can mess this up. So I think it's a fascinating game. I think the Niners will be able to run on Dallas. I think Dallas will be able to throw on San Francisco. The Niners have a much, 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 much better coaching situation. But I think that Dak Prescott could have 400 passing yards in this game. So ultimately, I'm going to take Dallas in this spot.
The Monday night game, Arizona at Los Angeles. I have been on the Rams bandwagon the entire season. I have them going to the Super Bowl. I picked them at the very beginning of the year, so I'm riding it all the way here. That's going to be a fun coin flip type game on Monday night.
Yeah, it is. I think that the DeAndre Hopkins injury really crushed any chances of the Cardinals to win a Super Bowl, because I thought that the Cardinals, their run defense has been bad all year, so that was the one issue. But when they had DeAndre Hopkins and James Conner with his whatever it was 15 touchdown season, and then you also have AJ Green and Christian Kirk and Zach Ertz, it honestly felt like a fairly unstoppable offense, that the run defense would not really be that big of a deal. because they were going to be a team that could peak at the right time and score 30-plus every game, and that one issue would neutralize it. But with DeAndre Hopkins out, and now Jalen Ramsey can, you know, A.J. Green's just not a difference maker anymore when he, like, needs to be a one. So I think that that really made their offense a lot more predictable, and it takes a lot of the big playability away from them. Not that DeAndre Hopkins is some sort of, like, Tyreek Hill burner, but just it's easier to key in on Ertz over the middle and taking away Connor out of the backfield, and they become a lot more basic and pedestrian. So I tend to agree with you. I lean Rams, but in terms of the point spread, it's probably the only point spread of the weekend I won't be betting.
Are you guys going to keep making national news on your show? Just every week, you got the Hub Arkis thing. You had the Olin Krutz where they offered him $15 a week. Are you guys just going to do this every week now?
I mean, that's the goal, man. That's the goal. You know, national news, international news. I can't make a movie, so I gotta make news. I gotta make news to keep this job. I got a second baby on the way. I got a wife who keeps coming up with new home improvement things that we need to do. I got a lot of expenses, Carrington. I got expensive habits. I like to have sushi for lunch. I like to take trips to play golf. So, you know, gotta break some news.
That's Danny Parkins, worldwide traveler, sushi connoisseur, joining us on the show today. Park, it's always good catching up with you, my man.
Always good catching up with you. And, yeah, I mean, honestly, like, the real victim of the pandemic has been I haven't been able to travel internationally in a couple of years. It's really – just keep me in your thoughts.